And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast. It is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is July 26, 2017, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio Studio One, we have Doug Newsom with us. Thank God he's all well. And we have a real call to all the leader of the free world. Get your act together. Get your act together and recognize the mess that we all in. Recognize the mess that you all are part of it, because you created it, and now let's fix it. Let's fix this. We say even that we didn't do a part of it and this is all your doing. We are asking you, get your act together, from US to Europe, from Africa to the Middle East, from everywhere, from every household that have children's, mom's, dad, grandfather, grandmother. This is a call of the hour for all the world to hear. Enough is enough. We need to have some peace and quiet, and let's get our act together and work. And for all you diplomats, all you Democrats in U.S. Congress, shame on you. 50-50 yesterday vote on the Senate. 50-50. Like, this is all politics. You don't care about the people in the middle. You don't care about those sickened people that have a problem with all your health care that you created. Shame on you. 50-50. The president is working hard, and you throw mud all day around with the media that forgot what truth is. And here today, I'm calling all of you in the media too, get your act together, because this world cannot and will not go scrambling. It's not going to create, you know, we are all responsible. We are old enough to understand the repercussion of everything. And if we do wrong, let's fix it. If we do right, let's bless it. Let's hug each other. It's enough. And all those Arab Muslim people that created all this mess in the world, all right, you want to fight? You know you're going to lose. So what the heck you're thinking? Let's finish with it. It's enough. Your turn is to turn the other cheek. Yes, it's over. So let's start the show. Now we have Protect, our beloved and respectful, you know, Itai Gil, that works so hard to defend, you know, this world from all these goons. Let's start with him.
We live in a world where terrorism can strike at any given moment. So I spent my entire life in trying to make the world a safer place. I know what it's like to live in terror, and I don't wish that on anyone. If the Protect company can expand beyond the Israeli borders into a business that is truly global, we will be able to minimize as many casualties and deaths worldwide. My name is Itai Gil, and this show is about my mission to protect the world.
Success is in the mind. One guy will say success is if I have millions in the bank, but he's still miserable. So materialistic, he's successful, but if he's happy, no, it has to have a combination that you have enough to do the hobbies you love, to have enough quality time with the family. Well, my wife, she's my best friend. We've been together for 16 years. She's very, very smart and spicy. She knows how to negotiate real well. I even offered her the job in Protect, leave the bank and work for me, but you know, for the moment, she's gonna stay in the bank. I spend many, many hours with my kids. They're in my environment all the time. They can feel me every day. It's not that I'm gone forever. They think I'm a little bit of a different father than the other fathers. You know, I have an extreme job. Go! My life be like, yeah. Okay, go, 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 go! Go to the corners, yeah! Go!
I was a soldier from a very young age, from 18.
I was exposed to, tactics, weapons. Later on, I was recruited to an elite counter-terror team. It's called YAMAM. Being in the counter-terror team for many, many years, active as special police team, I've done more than one arrest in my life, and I discovered that lots of things you learn in a so-called training center, dojo, doesn't work in real time. I had to come up with some solutions that will work in real time against certain aggressive criminals. We deal in combat and tactical training.
I'll go for this, but if you pull right on the head. You can still get me in the back if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
But we're going back here.
Yeah, I'm just doing that.
Can you imagine this 4 hours a day?
Yep.
Lovely, isn't it? You know, I've been nagging you for a long, long time to get this program started with security, intelligence, and counter-terror studies.
I'm convinced that we have to go to this area. Yes.
If you hit the right people, you can get them to participate and do what you want.
In the manner of speaking.
Comes to, no, I'm against violence, believe me. You know, very gently. You see, but it all comes to who you hit. I cannot change anyone's mindset. You know, if someone's locked down, he says, oh, it's just a businessman, he wants to make money. Of course, we're business and we do want to make money, and it's not a crime. But we also want to save lives. You know, when we were kids, no one ever took us to school. We always had to walk. I would do anything to protect my kids. Doesn't matter how much it would cost. I would put every effort to educate my kids to identify any suspicious behavior. Once in a while, you have a crazy guy entering school, he had a bad day, and he starts shooting everyone. He'll enter that room, and when chaos will begin, it's gonna be the task of the people that are in the classroom. They're the only ones that will be responsible for their own lives. All the shots went into center of mass of the bag. He destroys the bag, but that's it. Rips the books, but it increases your chances of surviving the upper mass, most lethal areas to get shot. If they enter, over. Imagine simultaneously many, many students doing exactly the same thing from different directions. It's an element of surprise.
You motherfuckers, everyone on the ground!
What does this mean? I had what? One shot? Two shots? That's the magic. We saved many lives today. Okay? That's the issue. We saved many, many lives. A person needs a reason to wake up in the morning.
And we are back. That was Itai Gil with Protect Program, program that teach everybody what they can do in case something awful is happening in the environment, in social study, in, you know, in a free market or whatever. You have to know what to do, and you can learn. It's not difficult, and it's not easy even, but it's a study. And we need to teach it. Like we teach a drill for fire, we need to teach a drill for terrorists. And those terrorists are all over. And if we get our act together as a team, we can actually save many lives. And, you know, we had a few conditions recently that we can talk about and we can analyze and see what happens and what actually happens on the ground. So we have a story. The story is the crisis that we have in Jerusalem right now. Jerusalem, the holy city that God dedicated, you know, to the world to come and pray, is in shambles again. Not as, you know, city, but it's on alert, on alarm, and we have a situation. Let's listen to the story from one side of the aisle, and I'm giving you the other side so I can correct what is being said in the media that is wrong, and I'll give you the real picture. And it's the actual history. They cannot change it. Let's listen to that.
Israel tightened its grip on one of Jerusalem's holiest and most sensitive sites after this incident last Friday. Three Israeli Palestinians were killed in a shootout with Israeli police. And two of these policemen later died of their injuries. It was one of the most serious incidents in occupied East Jerusalem in recent years. And as expected, it once again exposed tensions between Israelis and Palestinians.
They are beating up the elderly and religious scholars. They don't respect anyone. Yesterday, we were brutally beaten after the night prayers. And we still came here. We don't give up. They will not plant fear in people's hearts. We are here with our children and our women. We will not give up.
The contested compound is known as Temple Mount to Jews and Al-Aqsa Mosque to Muslims. Under the status quo, Muslims are given religious control over the compound, and Jews are allowed to visit, but not pray. Israel denies it's trying to change that status quo, but Palestinians don't believe it. And now with the installation of metal detectors at the gates following last week's incident, that mistrust has led to daily confrontation.
The occupiers want to scare the youth so they don't come back. But we say to the occupation, people of Jerusalem are faithfully linked to Al-Aqsa Mosque, and they will come back and will perform prayers around Aqsa until metal detectors are removed. So Al-Aqsa Mosque returns to its Muslim administration as it was before.
And it seems that incidents like these are not fueled so much by religion, but by an occupation that's now lasted more than 50 years. Rahul Radhakrishnan, TRT World.
All right. Now let's analyze what they said. They said that there are three Palestinians were killed in a shootout. Now, if you have the video, you can go on YouTube and see the video of that Friday, 2 weeks ago. What a shootout. There was not a shootout. Two terrorists came out of the mosque in the back like cowards of the policemen and shoot them. All right. So there was not a shootout. They come and attacked. And then the other Israeli killed those three terrorists. OK, they follow them. And those two were dead on the get-go. They killed them immediately. So it wasn't the shootout between those that they just killed. You see, they're trying to even think that they were a hero. No, they didn't. They were cowards. They shoot them in the back. And then the other Israeli soldier came after them and shoot them. Okay? So this is one. Second, they're talking about occupation of East Jerusalem. Now, let's repeat it. There was never a Palestinian state. All right? Get a grip. They are living in a la la land. It's like crazy people talking bullshit all the day. I'm sorry, I said that BS all day long. If there was not a marriage, let's say, with that land, there was not a state, can you say you were married? You cannot say you were married. There was none. Okay, so when they say occupation, we are talking about disputed territory. And what is disputed territory? Let's go to the idea. What we have? We have an agreement that we are negotiating with the Palestinian. The Palestinian is supposed to come to the table. Not, you know, and they have to decide in what way we're going to have a peace. So until then, Israel is in that control, and there is the documents signed and delivered that Israel is going to be in control of the area until we others, if at all, something will change. Okay? Now, they're talking about this whole thing. It's not a religious. Look how they're trying to alternate. This is the media. It's not about the occupation. Think the analysis they're making. It's a holy site. It's about religious freedom. And they're talking about not a religion fight. It's only the occupation of 50 years of Israel. Now, 50 years. Go back in history. What's the 50 years back? It's 1967. What happened in 1967? The war of 6 days. What happened then? Jordan attacked Israel. What happened then? Israel conquered Jerusalem. We want it free and clear. Okay, so we conquer it. Now they want it back. But they want it back under the pretense of Palestinian state, which never existed. But the Jordanians are doubling the odds on their holy space, they say. Now, the Jordanians are supposed to, by peace accord with Israel, to control the worship zone, the mosque. The Temple Mount is 44 acres. There is none control of the area. They have no right on the whole area, only on the two mosques that on the top of the mountain. Because if you remember, this site was the ground of the holy site of the first and second temple of Solomon. And then Ezra and Nehemiah, let's not go in that detail. However, it's a holy site for all the world to come and worship. That's the deal. This is why Jerusalem exists, to have. That's why maybe they weren't thinking about it when 181 of the United Nations resolution in 1947 said it. And he said it very clear. Jerusalem's supposed to be international. So what part of international can be occupied if it's international? All right? So you guys, maybe before you could say that people are stupid, they don't get it. Now you just go on YouTube and see it. So let me give you a little run out of what you're going to find, the truth about history. You got our third segment. We'll talk about the thinker, you know, about the British mandate, because there was no Palestinian state. There were Turks, Ottoman Empire, then the British mandate. In between, there is no state of Palestine, all right? So let's get our story together. And I'm trying to teach them, you know, they don't send them to school for nothing. They're trying to send them, you know, a story, a lala. It's a Cinderella story that will never happen. Oh, poor babies. They need to get a grip with reality. Let's listen to that.
The Allied powers reconvened a year after the Paris meetings in San Remo, Italy, to discuss the mandates for the former Turkish territories. Their decisions in San Remo created a new map for the Middle East. In San Remo, it was decided that the Balfour Declaration would be incorporated into an international treaty called the Mandate for Palestine. Palestine was to be a special case, fundamentally different from the mandates for Syria and Iraq. Understanding the difference between these mandates is crucial to understanding the Zionist claims to Israel-Palestine. The mandates for Syria and Iraq focused on the Arab people actually living in those lands. The mandate for Palestine didn't just focus on the people living in Palestine. Great Britain's responsibility would be to follow through on the promises made in the Balfour Declaration, which applied to the Jewish people worldwide.
According to the Articles of the Mandate for Palestine, the nations of the world and international law recognize the Jewish people's historical connection to Palestine and their rights to reconstitute their national home there.
And it made the Jewish people a recipient of self-determination in Israel-Palestine. The mandate said that the Arabs in Palestine would receive civil and religious rights, but not the political rights of self-determination. The Arab people would receive their political rights in the rest of the Middle East, under the mandates for Syria and Iraq. In San Remo, the Allied powers created mandates that allowed tens of millions of Arabs to gain their freedom from Turkish rule.
Now, to our next hot topic.
When it came to the mandate for Palestine, the Allied powers gave the Jewish people, not the Arabs, prospective sovereignty in Palestine. Was this unjust? The Arabs thought so. They were the majority population there, and had been since the 13th century. The Jewish people had a different perspective. Palestine was their ancient homeland. It had been Turkish territory, not Arab territory, since 1517. And the Arabs were given basically all of the Turks' other territory, except for the small portion given to the Jews. Even Faisal, the representative of the Arab people, excluded Palestine from the territory he requested when he went before the Supreme Council. Still, not everyone was happy. The Arabs living in Palestine, stirred to outrage by Haj Amin al-Husseini, responded with opposition and violent uprisings against the Jews there. The British solution? To partition Palestine and create a new Arab state in East Palestine and a new Jewish state in West Palestine. The newly created Arab state of Jordan was 77% of the territory initially planned for the Jewish national home. In the area that remained, Jewish institution building grew, but so did Arab resistance. In 1936, Haj Amin al-Husseini, now the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, called on Arabs to stop paying taxes to the British government until it stopped Jewish immigration, ended Arab land sales to the Jews, and created an all-Arab government. Because of Husseini's role in inciting the Palestine Arabs, the British government deported him. But it was too late. Thousands of Arabs had been killed or wounded by the British, and the Arab economy in Palestine was crippled. Britain's post-revolt report basically concluded that Arab and Jewish interests couldn't be resolved. It called for quotas on Jewish immigration, restriction of Arab land sales to Jews, and the creation of an Arab agency. The report said the mandate should be terminated and what remained of Palestine must be separated into independent Arab and Jewish states. A second partition of Palestine was in the works. The land recommendation changes were huge. The new Arab state would get 80% of the territory west of the Jordan River and be united with Jordan, leaving only 10% of the land originally set aside for the Jewish national home. Surprisingly, no one accepted the paper, not even the Arabs. And the timing of the paper was tragic. Nazi Germany was moving towards its final solution. Jews in Europe underwent mass extermination over the next 5 years. And British authorities denied entry into Palestine to Jewish refugees hoping to escape the Holocaust. Even after World War II, with hundreds of thousands of Jewish Holocaust survivors stuck in refugee camps, Britain continued restricting Jewish immigration to Palestine. The Zionists were outraged. Attacks on British property followed, and violence between Jews and Arabs intensified. Broke after two world wars and having failed to resolve the conflict, in 1947, with tensions escalating, the British government announced that it would ask the League of Nations' newly formed successor, the United Nations, to find a solution for Palestine.
All right. You understand that there was so much, you know, confusion about the facts because the leadership of the world never, you know, sustained their decision. They always try to cover up their misstep. They don't actually believe in what they do. They just try to manage their state of affair. And like we have now, we have now the, you know, attack on Temple Mount, the Israeli police automatically, like a technical thing, put control of metal detectors in the entry of the mosque, or not of the mosque, of the Temple Mount, of the all area, not just for the mosque, of course, out of the Temple Mount. And the Arab decided the Palestinian, so-called Palestinian, they revolt here and they make a mess. And what they say is, until they don't remove those metal detectors, we don't move. So they, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu say, okay, let's move them. We'll think about something else to control the area. We'll put cameras. And those saying, no, we don't want anything. We want the status quo. Like they have a say in this. Like I said last week, the metal detector will stay and Benjamin Netanyahu removed them. Let's say it's not my cup of tea. I don't act like this. I don't think like this. I think automatically like them, you know, like Itai Gil will say. They will say, put the metal detector because there was a threat. There was an attack. That's it. You can't negotiate with security. They're negotiating. And Benjamin Netanyahu did the wrong thing. And he's going to definitely see the consequence. You know why? Because as they behave bad, it's not like normal people. Like they come before court and said, okay, let's negotiate. Let's win. Whoever wins, thank you. Sportsmanship. Shake your hands and you go and everybody continue on. No. they get more aggravated. They get more upset. They incite themselves, and we have actually, we have a product of incitement in the Arab organized member of Knesset. You have to see them. They come, member of Knesset, Arab, okay, Muslim, come before the policeman and try to aggravate. They actually harass them, insult them in their face, and then they say that they have the right to participate in the democracy of this land. I don't know if anybody knows Zoabi. Hanin Zoabi is one of the Arab, organized Arab list in Israel Knesset. And what she does is she goes on the one of those ships for Gaza, like terrorist ship that had knives on it. And the Supreme Court, which was an Arab judge, decided that she did nothing wrong. It's all good. You can be, you know, you can act with terrorists and be a part of the government. And the world is silent. The world is silent. You see, I am very American in many forms. I was trained by American institution. I was trained with the best. I know when something is not legal. I know immediately. My gut tells me, and my reason also, and I see and I read and I'm listening. I know that this judge that decided not to do the right thing and, you know, outlaw this list for the Knesset, it was, I was, you know, I didn't want to say he's a Muslim or he's whatever. He was Arab, Israeli. I didn't want to say anything. But then we found out something else. You see, we have a beautiful saying in Israel. Oh, it's a democratic Jewish nation. You know, it's not democratic and it's not Jewish completely. Because if it was Jewish, nobody could say that the holiest place of all, you're not allowed to pray. Do you understand? You just go to the Vatican and said you're not allowed to pray. Yeah, why? Because you're not allowed to pray. Like anti-Jewish sentiment? No. And Benjamin Netanyahu will go in the United Nations and said, I'll keep the mosque safe. It's yes, yeah, so what about the Jews? What about my right? What about my right to respect my God? Why my ancestors suffered so much? Why we had to go through so much, 2,000 years of diaspora, of pushing around, being pushed around all over the globe? But let's not undermine what the Jewish people suffered for 2,000 years. Of course, you have the last epoch that says, you know, the Holocaust is the symbolics of the suffering. Yes. And 2,000 years of more. We talking about the Spanish execution. We are talking Arab. Come on. You had all those Arab countries. My parents came from Libya. What do you have in Libya now? Nothing. But what about my ancestor, my parents, my grandparents' home? What about their businesses? They had to flee. Did we have compensation? Nothing. Why? You know, why? You come from a different country. You have no right to get compensation. Why? And all the government that is right or left wing, whatever, decided, oh, those from Africa, they don't deserve compensation from the Nazi Germany that they received. No, it's in a, what are you going to divide the bank and to make it smaller, paying all those, you know, children. They have many children they don't need. You see, the racism never stops. And I'm so tired of making up goody two shoes and now we have a new deal. Okay? Let's say it. And I'm gonna talk frankly because I'm so not tired. I'm not tired because I'm all up and about for the state of Israel. That's the only life I got. I have no other life, only the state of Israel, and that's how it's gonna be. Because I care so much for my brother and sisters. I care also for my Arab brother and sister. And I care, obviously, to my other fellow men in around the globe that I love and cherish. But I want to be worthy before God. And being worthy before God is the mandate to send that was sent us here. To be here in a place where you can come and be hugged with Spirit of God. you can come to visit Israel, the Holy Land, and come and pray before God and get your blessing. You can come and ask God for forgiveness. You can come and sing because the universe is so mighty and incredible. We can come and ask for generous spirit. I don't know what. Whatever you care for, that's our duty, to be the custodian of a holy place. But now we have a racketeering on the area. They are trying to not just, I don't want to call what's going on in the state of Israel outrageous, but I'm going to tell you, it's not normal. And of course, they send, you know, the American ambassadors. God bless him. Mr. Friedman is such a treasure. Guys, he's such a great person. He come humbly to the Knesset yesterday. I'm so sorry. I didn't know it's going to take place. I had another invitation for the Knesset yesterday. I was there Monday. I said, okay, I paid my dues. I'm not going again on Tuesday. And I'm sorry I missed Mr. Friedman. And it was not a mistake, because I'm going to compensate. And knowing me, I'll make sure that the next time he's coming to the Knesset, it's going to be worthy and it's going to be incredible, because he deserved the respect. And he deserved the respect that we have, because he and President Donald J. Trump did the right thing and help, you know, stop this incredible seizure on the embassy in Jordanian, in Israel, you know, the embassy of Israel in Jordan. And remember, Jordan is playing with fire, and let's say it. And the Turks, of course, the Turks, they don't miss an opportunity to put their nose where they don't belong. And they're trying to mess with Israel on the other side, you know, when they are messing with Russia and America in the same token, having the Kurds in the north fighting. He thinks that he's still the Ottoman Empire. It's like, what is gonna be with this gentleman? I hope you remember, we still have long time to manage people, so just get off that high horse. Now, let me tell you, we had a wonderful president, a Republican president, like we do have many Republican representatives that do deserve to be called honorable. And we're going to have Trey Gowdy after that, that is an honorable man. But right now, we had Ronald Reagan, that he had a plan on the U.S. policy in the Middle East and the peace process with Israel. He had something. Let's listen to it. All right? That's our fourth segment, guys.
I have personally followed and supported Israel's heroic struggle for survival ever since the founding of the State of Israel 34 years ago. In the pre-1967 borders, Israel was barely 10 miles wide at its narrowest point. The bulk of Israel's population lived within artillery range of hostile Arab armies. I am not about to ask Israel to live that way again. But it's become evident to me that some clearer sense of America's position on the key issues is necessary to encourage wider support for the peace process. First, as outlined in the Camp David Accords, there must be a period of time during which the Palestinian inhabitants of the West Bank and Gaza will have full autonomy over their own affairs. Due consideration must be given to the principle of self-government by the inhabitants of the territories and to the legitimate security concerns of the parties involved. The purpose of the 5-year period of transition, which would begin after free elections for a self-governing Palestinian authority, is to prove to the Palestinians that they can run their own affairs and that such Palestinian autonomy poses no threat to Israel's security. I want to make the American position well understood. The purpose of this transitional period is the peaceful and orderly transfer of authority from Israel to the Palestinian inhabitants of the West Bank and Gaza. At the same time, such a transfer must not interfere with Israel's security requirements. Beyond the transition period, as we look to the future of the West Bank and Gaza, it is clear to me that peace cannot be achieved by the formation of an independent Palestinian state in those territories. Nor is it achievable on the basis of Israeli sovereignty or permanent control over the West Bank and Gaza. So the United States will not support the establishment of an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza, and we will not support annexation or permanent control by Israel. There is, however, another way to peace. The final status of these lands must, of course, be reached through the give and take of negotiations. But it is the firm view of the United States that self-government by the Palestinians of the West Bank and Gaza, in association with Jordan, offers the best chance for a durable, just, and lasting peace. We base our approach squarely on the principle that the Arab-Israeli conflict should be resolved through negotiations involving an exchange of territory for peace. This exchange is enshrined in United Nations Security Council Resolution 242, which is in turn incorporated in all its parts in the Camp David agreements. UN Resolution 242 remains wholly valid as the foundation stone of America's Middle East peace effort. It is the United States' position that in return for peace, the withdrawal provision of Resolution 242 applies to all fronts, including the West Bank and Gaza. When the border is negotiated between Jordan and Israel, our view on the extent to which Israel should be asked to give up territory will be heavily affected by the extent of true peace and normalization and the security arrangements offered in return. Finally, we remain convinced that Jerusalem must remain undivided, but its final status should be decided through negotiations. In the course of the negotiations to come, the United States will support positions that seem to us fair and reasonable compromises and likely to promote a sound agreement. We will also put forward our own detailed proposals when we believe they can be helpful. And make no mistake, the United States will oppose any proposal from any party and at any point in the negotiating process that threatens the security of Israel. America's commitment to the security of Israel is ironclad, and I might add, so is mine.
All right. God bless his soul, President Ronald Reagan. You were exemplary. We loved you. We still love you. And we example whatever you stand for. And let's just think what he just said. He says the position is on 242, but he says that there is supposed to be 5 years of self-governing, like no, you know, all security, only after free election. That they didn't make a free election since 2005, so there is no free election. So let's assume that they decide, okay, let's goody two shoes, we're playing by the rules. Free election in Palestinian authority, it means that the Hamas, the terrorist organization that is controlling Gaza, needs to go or needs to disarm itself so they can govern normally, even though, you know, they take care of their people probably. If not, they would revolt or, you know, they'd be killed, of course. So we have a free election and no threat to Israel. Okay, we didn't have 5 years since the Oslo agreement like this. 1993 till now, we're still negotiating. They never get their act together. Now, they said this transition authority to transfer is requirement. We transfer Gaza. We didn't get nothing as far as peace and security. Now, we don't talk about annexation. They're trying to annex more a part of Qalqilya by implementing or building 5,000 places, which today, after there was a guy from Qalqilya that's over the border, you know, the narrow 10 miles range that there is talking about in the segment, There was an attack from that area, so their expansion is not going to be approved, hopefully. Then they're talking about self-governing. You need to start governing, but association with Jordan. You see, that's where he doesn't believe in a free Palestinian state. He believed in self-governing with association with Jordan. And that's what Jordan is doing. They have to take responsibility to the passport holder of Jordanian that they're all Palestinians. You see, Jordan is that Palestine that they all hope for. But there was one king that decided to rule over them. So no Palestinian, go find the Jews. You know, it's all them blame. He took the land of the Palestinian Arab part of Palestine, which they were cohabitate of a land called Palestine. They didn't have a country, okay? Let's remind the listeners. And then he says, go get it from the Jews. It's all them to blame. Well, I'm giving it back to you, Mr. Jordanian. It's all yours to take. Okay, so you have to go back to the original plan where you can have your side of the Palestinian land made for Arab. Okay, whoever wants to live there, it's their business. Now, they're talking about Jerusalem not to be divided, of course. Now, if it's the right of Israel is based, all this decree for Israel based on our ancestry rights, biblical rights, it means that the Temple Mount is supposed to be given back. Now, it's supposed to be given back with respect, because we are not going to tolerate their huffing and puffing. Because every time you have a synagogue that was destroyed and you build a church or a mosque, it doesn't mean that you have the right. You see, that's why they scramble and went underneath and tried to get rid of all the archaeological, debris, so they can get rid of the facts. But the Bible is there, can change that. They have, God, why don't we invent something new? Because it's again and again the same story, right? I can't think about something, but with this internet time, we can solve it, and probably they're gonna be interested. They're gonna be flying cars soon, and the world is gonna change. Come on, let's turn the page of this history. And you, our brothers, it's enough to fight, all right? And we in the world, we need to get our act together. Now, getting our act together, we're going back to America. America, my beautiful, beautiful state that I love so much. And I want to give an example of what Trey Gowdy is saying about Jeff Sessions. All right, let's listen to that.
All right, I want to turn to now what the president has been saying about the Attorney General Jeff Sessions. We just played some sound from that and his tweets, obviously. Your thoughts on this and a president and an attorney general that obviously doesn't have the confidence of the president?
Well, Brett, it's sad for me on a number of levels. Having worked in the Justice Department, I view that job differently from other government jobs, other cabinet-level jobs. I don't think personnel decisions are usually well resolved over Twitter. I think the president's frustration was not the recusal. I hope it wasn't, because I don't think Attorney General Sessions had a choice but to recuse himself. If the president's going to be frustrated, he should be frustrated by what led up to the recusal, which was Senator Sessions had a faulty memory. I think that's what led him to have to recuse himself. The recusal itself was appropriate. His failure to recall meetings with the Russian ambassador is what led him to that point. And if the president is frustrated about that, I understand his frustration, but you work all that out during the interview process, not after you get the job.
But if you're Attorney General and you're reading and hearing all of this, are you resigning?
Well, you should immediately leave any country where I was the Attorney General. I would not stay if my employer had lost confidence in me. But on the other hand, Attorney General Sessions may believe that he is doing the job the way he is supposed to. He doesn't work for the president. He works for a blindfolded woman holding a set of scales. So he's got to make that call. It's a very difficult circumstance. And again, I view that job differently than I do Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Agriculture. It is heartbreaking to me as a former DOJ employee to see public squabbling between the commander-in-chief and the nation's top law enforcement officer.
Do you think that this will be resolved, all of these investigations, anytime soon?
I hope so. Brett, we are, again, we'll do three interviews this week. Part of that depends upon the pace with which the Democrats on the House side act. And based on what I heard this morning, which was cramming 5 minutes of questioning into 3 hours, they benefit from this lasting as long as possible. Those with California Senate ambitions and others benefit from this lasting as long as possible. So at some point, I hope our leaders on our side will say, we're going to march forward with or without you. And again, Bob Mueller, which I think is what most people are waiting on. I hope they're not waiting on Congress to unlock the mysteries of the world. I hope they're waiting on Bob Mueller. I don't have any idea how long that's going to take.
Last thing, put your health care hat on. The Senate moves forward with the motion to proceed. They're now amending the bill. If the Senate finally gets to something that they're going to pass and they go to conference committee, are you confident that you all can get something through?
I am. That's a lot of ifs, and that might be the seventh sign of the apocalypse if all that happened. But yes, I think that we can pass something if the Senate is able to do so.
All right. Mr. Chairman, thanks for the time.
Yep.
All right. That was beautiful, Representative Trey Gowdy, that I wish it will be the next Attorney General, because if you think about his ways and the way he talks about all the laws and the state of mind, you know, he's so clear and so bright, and we do have to honor his resolve in all this condition. And of course, he had a chance to be dead of FBI, but he did not. And he said something very humbly. He said, they have a better choice than him. I couldn't think about any, but I guess that they choose a good one anyway. Now, I'm so happy with them, because they're going to clear the air, and it's going to change. You know, they're going to get their act together. They passed the, you know, the motion now in the Senate. Of course, I'm not happy with 50-50, because there is never possibility that people don't think differently from each other. And to have like a line in the sand, Democrats and Republicans, it's outrageous. So I'm very hopeful, and I'm praying to God. I'm praying to God in this time. You know, in the Jewish calendar, we have 9 days before the day that we fast for commemorating the destruction of the Holy Temple. And it all happens in these days. It's happened these days, and all the history of the Jewish people always remind us that in those days, things that the most horrible happened to the Jewish people. And I'm not talking about pity. I'm talking about regret, about how we couldn't make the right conscious decision to stay on the part of God. It's like those metal detector, you know, safety, trusting God. They didn't have that in them. They don't have them. They actually listened to the crowd. And, you know, there is a story about, it's coincided with the King Solomon. And they were asking, why Saul, King Saul, you know, before David there was King Saul, that was very aggravated, the king, the father of Jonathan, that was the best friends of King David. It says King Saul lost his reins. And why was that? Because he came and asked the people. When you are a king or when you are a leader, you need to know the answer just right in your gut. You need to know immediately what you're feeling, what you know. That's the message, because that's why you get that, you grant that favor before God to lead people, because he trusted you. Now, once you are not trust, you can't trust your own voice, the inside voice, it means that you are actually losing the hold of this connection. And I'm so saddened that the Jewish people have to go through so much in history, because they were losing that hold of the connection with God. They wanted to be assimilated, to be like everybody else. But you know, when you go to church or you go to the shul or you go to the mosque, you don't expect that the one that is holding the prayer to look like you. You are trying to look up to him, right? And if you're a messenger and you're supposed to be like godly, you cannot pretend like, okay, let's play now routine. It's not happening. That's why there is a saying also always in the Bible that says, don't come and be friendly with my prophets. My prophets cannot be your friend. You don't try to be, you know, coats with them. It's not happening. You need to respect them, and that's all. Because the message should go through them. And if there is a message these days, is to remind everybody that we hold the power to fight. We hold the power to win. But we hold the power to bring peace to the universe. It's all up to us. We need to accumulate all our beloved and thank God and remind us all that we've been through so much in history that we cannot repeat it. We know what they had to go through. You see, if you see the, you heard what I was playing. I told you about the history. I talked about, you know, from the rebels of one state, the Turks. They were holding position since the 1500s. Just imagine the Palestinians talking of something, they're talking about the heritage. There was no heritage. There were the Turks here. That's why probably he's talking back again. Maybe he wants a piece of it. I don't know what he's planning. But the idea is, we didn't fix that yet. We can get our act together because the history, every time somebody's changing. So why don't we put it in one whole conference? And there is 100 years to the Balfour Declaration this year in November. Let's create, I want to create. I beg you all, please come together. Let's all make a plan to make a conference to talk about the facts. Fact, truth. Don't let anybody say anything to you that is not correct. History, maps, everything. And we negotiate. At the end of the day, you remember that there is a God and it's not us. So we need to play along, all right? And we are the Jewish people. We are the messenger, the keeper, the holy land keeper. And nothing can change us. We are the proof of the Bible. And our friends, you know, the Christians are there to testify for that. We are part of them. They are part of us. All right? So I wish you all the best. And I'm sending you all with our last segment that I hope that it will be a prayer for you to understand that we love you all. There is a beautiful world out there that we need to respect. Say, I love you every day when you go in and go out because you don't know how many chances you're going to have more. God bless you all. Ciao, ciao.